We need a real investigation. I don't think we have one yet.
Yes, it's true. And yes, it is a crime.
Well, thank you, Cleta Mitchell. Thank you for that explanation. Really interesting and kind of appalling.
Thank you,
really.
Tucker.
Cleta Mitchell is somebody with great courage, and she's involved with your litigation and lawsuits and all of this stuff. She literally gave up her whole practice not to get paid. She saw how corrupt it was, how disgusting it was, how dirty it was. And I want to thank you on behalf of everybody in this room and everybody in this country. You are a hell of a lawyer and tough. And that's what we need.
Welcome to this week's episode of Who's Counting? It's our podcast from the Conservative Partnership Institute's Election Integrity Network. This is about all things elections, how to save our elections, how to become engaged and involved and knowledgeable about America's election systems, and what you can do as a citizen to be able to help save our election system. And in that regard, we're so fortunate today to have someone I consider to be a real heroine, and that is Shelley Oberlander. That's O-B as in boy, E-R-L-A-N-D-E-R, Shelley Oberlander, who was and is the chair of the, or one of the chairs, Shelley, you can correct me, particularly if I get it wrong, of the Loudoun County Citizens Election Integrity Task Force, Loudoun County, Virginia. So we all across the country watched with delight about the election results in Virginia. But one of the things that made me the happiest was to see that the Washington Post and Time Magazine both wrote articles about the thousands of poll workers and poll watchers that turned out in droves to make sure that Virginia's election in 2021 was conducted properly and in accordance with the law. And Shelley Oberlander is one of the reasons that that happened. So, Shelley, I'd like to introduce you to our audience and tell us about yourself. Let's just start with, let's learn about Shelley.
Well, my name is obviously Shelley Oberlander, and I am the Election Integrity Workgroup Chairman for the Loudoun County Republican Committee. So it's one of the committees of our Loudoun County, local Loudoun County Republican Group. And I'm a resident of, I'm a lifelong Virginian and resident of Loudoun County for about 22 years. And I'm a homeschool mom. I homeschooled for about 30 years. So I've always been interested in politics and elections. And I was a poll worker passing up sample ballots for years, bring my kids with me and they would help. And I was the precinct captain in our local precinct and did that responsibility, encouraging others to come and help pass out sample ballots. And then last June, it was a year ago, when COVID was in full swing, our chairman of the local Loudoun County Republicans said that we needed election officers. There weren't enough to conduct our primary. And, you know, a lot of the election officers are elderly and they were concerned about coming out because of, you know, COVID. And a lot of them are Democrats and they're probably weren't as eager to come out for COVID for a Republican primary. So I signed up to be an election officer and that's how I began that journey. So that's
fantastic. Did you have a, tell us about, were you also an election officer during the November 2020 election in Virginia?
I was. So I was an election officer for early voting at last in 2020 and then also for the general. I was an election officer for both of those.
Did you see
for the Democratic primary and then just the recent one as well? Yeah.
Did you see anything during the general election that particularly caught your eye or anything that caused you to decide to do this election integrity task force? And what exactly happened from your service as an election official to chairing this election integrity task force?
Well, as you know, the other component besides COVID that hit Virginia was our governor and our general assembly were all Democrat at the same time. And so they acted really fast to change our election laws and removed a lot of the protections that we'd had. They created no voter ID. We still have an ID, but no voter ID in Virginia. We have 45 days of early voting and other laws were lax. So during the 45 days of voting last year, I as a poll worker passing out sample ballots and then as an election officer inside, I noticed hordes of people bringing in their absentee ballots and turning them in because it was a huge absentee ballot push last year. We had 80,000 absentee ballots sent out in Loudoun County. And
80,000 in Loudoun County?
Last November 2020. And 20,000 of them were returned in person for people to vote in person. They changed their mind for whatever reason. But I noticed that those absentee ballots were just turned in. And in the past, you would have to bubble in all of the circles, and they were just turned in. So they were basically live ballots if they ever left the envelope. They always said, you know, it's attached to the envelope, and that person is in the poll book, and it shows that they've returned the ballot and they voted in person. But if the ballot ever left the envelope, it was a live ballot. So I kept bringing that to the attention of the superiors. And what I've learned in this process, and maybe it's just with government in general, you get pushback. Nobody wants to change anything, and everything's fine. So you have to, you know, with politeness and grace, just continue to ask again and again. And so it took 5 weeks, but they finally started invalidating those absentee ballots. And they opted for a tear in them, not totally in half, but a small tear. And it was exciting to see this year that policy was totally changed to be a black marker through all the bubbles. So Loudoun County really stepped up, and the general registrar opted to create a policy where those absentee ballots were totally invalidated and could never vote for any candidate. So that was exciting to see that when we are there just observing, whether it's just because of all the changes that were happening with the 45 days of early voting or just whatever reason, there was a bad policy in place where there was a vulnerability. And we were able to point that out to the registrar. It took a few weeks, but by the end of that 6 weeks of early voting, they were rendering those ballots invalid. And this year it was the official policy. So that was exciting to see.
You know, it's interesting, isn't it, that that wasn't something that was already standard policy statewide?
Well, it was policy to bubble in and render that ballot invalid, and also just to protect the voters' privacy for maybe if they had marked in some of the people, we wouldn't have known who they were. But in the name of COVID, so much was removed. So many precautions and normal procedures were removed, and they said they didn't want people waiting in line to bubble in their bubbles and get them in and out and et cetera, et cetera. But we came up with the line through with a black marker, and those things are quickly rendered invalid, and that was a solution for everybody.
That's a huge accomplishment, and it only happened because you were there. It wouldn't have happened if you hadn't been there and been persistent.
Both being there, watching what's happening, and being persistent. Exactly.
So after the 2020 general election, then tell us about really step by step, how did you decide to form this election integrity task force or committee? And just tell people how you did that, and why you did that.
Well, there were a lot of anomalies in the 2020 election and a lot of concerns, and just things didn't make sense. And so the powers that be that we thought would rectify or look into them and, you know, bring justice or verify the true outcome, whichever way that was, none of them were happening. The Supreme Court didn't take the cases. Other courts weren't taking the cases. The effort to possibly send electoral votes back to the state legislatures and some of the swing states, none of that happened. The audits weren't happening, nothing. And then it was even, you know, being quenched in silence. So I had a concern. I wanted to help. And so I wasn't seeing much happening. There was a summit in Harrisonburg in March with some of our friends who created that. So I went to learn there. And all the people I thought would help and fix it, none of the answers were there. And it looked like the only place you could work was at home, grassroots in your local county. So I went back, seeking to do that. And our chairman was wanting to form an election integrity work group for Loudoun County. And so I went to the first meeting and no one was leading it. And I just told her if anybody, you know, was needed, I would be happy to lead it. And eventually, end of April, she asked me if I'd lead it. And by the end of May, we had our first real meeting, and over 50 people came. The interest of so many wanting to know what happened and what they could do to bring election integrity was huge. And I think it helps people to learn, be educated, and to do something. And so our 50 has even turned to an email list of 350.
Wow.
Good attendance. And just we have had a lot of people step up and help.
Well, that is really interesting to me that you went from smaller and you grew. Sometimes it starts out exciting and then the numbers shrink. But it was just the opposite in this case. That's pretty amazing. Tell everybody about Loudoun County. We heard a lot about Loudoun County during the election. Some of us who've lived in Washington, D.C. and around Northern Virginia for years, we know about the growth of Loudoun County. But can you just explain where Loudoun County is and a little bit about the politics and sort of set the stage for what is Loudoun County and tell us about it?
Loudoun County is in Northern Virginia. We're very north and east of Fairfax and west of Fairfax and east of West Virginia. So kind of at the peak, we're close to Maryland and close to West Virginia. We have a mix with rural and also, more of a city environment with Leesburg and Sterling and Eastern Loudoun. So there's that complexity. It's affluent. We're financially well off here in Loudoun County. And I think a lot of people work, but I think there was some laxness with just trusting the government, trusting the schools and everything, and have the happy life. And as people were living the happy life, they were realizing it wasn't as good as they thought. And the institutions were not serving them well and actually disserving them and really abusing the trust that we'd had in the institutions, especially the school system here. And so a lot of people started becoming, involved in that. And also because of the 2020 election, wanting to be involved in the election. So I think people were willing to finally step out of their comfortable life and do something, be involved, be engaged, and find out what's really going on and what can I do to help and change it.
Is Loudoun County primarily a Democrat county, or is it primarily Republican, or is it go both ways?
I'd say it's both ways. I mean, there's a lot of Republicans here, and I think with some of the things that have happened, we felt like there'd be more of a swing to the Republicans. We've had some congressional leaders who were Republicans, and then barely lost that election the last time, where we have now a Democratic Congresswoman. So it's kind of a tug and pull. So we haven't given up here. I really think that the Republican policies are the best policies for everybody. I believe that they really cause everyone to thrive. And the more we can get that message out to all the communities here in Loudoun County, I think that it has a great potential to go red and go Republican, because I really do believe the policies of the Republicans benefit everybody.
So talk about, you've attended a meeting, and you see that nobody's really taking the lead, and you raise your hand and say, okay, I'll be the leader. So tell people, if I'm in my county and I want to do what you did, then you tell everybody, what do you do? Step one, what's the first thing to do?
Well, the first thing I did, and it really started before I became the leader of the Election Integrity Work Group, was I started attending the electoral board meetings. So your county has an electoral board of three members. There's two members who are from the governor's party. So we have two Democrats right now, and then one is from the minority party, Republicans. And started attending those meetings so I could learn what was happening with our election system here in Loudoun County. And I started researching it as well, and just learning all that I could and becoming involved. And then we had the meeting, and there was just a lot of work to be done. We started learning that we knew we needed election officers. We were very underrepresented. In Loudoun County, we had 50% Democrat election officers, 25% Republicans, and 25% nonpartisans. And we vetted the nonpartisans. We learned that most of those were Democrats as well. So we were very underrepresented, and so we didn't have parity. And Virginia law calls for parity. It calls for, by law, for there to be 50-50 representation of the two major parties, if practicable. And so that's where we started, was recruiting election officers. We had this little flyer that we sent out with a code that went right to the Loudoun County. You have to register at the county website with the election office there. And so it took them right there so they could sign up. And we needed to do it early on, because it takes almost 2 months. A party chair has to approve you, and then the electoral board has to approve you. So we knew we needed to do that first. And we are proud to say that we recruited over 150 new election officers, and they were trained by us and by the county. And we had very close to parity this election here in 2021, with almost 50-50 representation with election officers being Republican and Democrat. And then also one of the chief or the assistant chief, one should be Republican and one should be Democrat. And it's just a great system. And it was good for the Republicans to step up and provide the resources for them to have 50-50. We also, you have to learn, I don't know if it's the government or whatever, you have to learn the tricks of the trade. So there were people before that were Republicans that said I was an election officer and they never called me. They said that they didn't need me. And people would sign up to work in their precinct. And we learned that you needed to say you'd work anywhere in the county because maybe where you live, there's a lot of Republicans. And so if they only need 4 or 5 Republicans at that precinct, they would call and say, we don't need you. We're full. But they wouldn't say, would you serve anywhere else? And so we had people put they'd work anywhere in the county. And then we worked through our chairman. Anything that we saw that needed to be done, we'd work with our chairman of our Republican Party, and she would send letters to the registrar and make recommendations and ask if they would do this. And so we asked that they would hire all the Republican election officers before hiring the nonpartisans, and they did. So we were pleased with that. Do you want more?
I want to say something about that because what you just described is not unique to Loudoun County. I have seen that in multiple states where the law says that it's supposed to be 50-50 with the two major parties, and yet they always end up putting Democrats in Republican slots. And the reason the statutes are written the way they are is so that, you know, it's a way for the parties to keep a check on the other one. And that's the way it's supposed to be, the balance. And, you know, we'll watch you and you watch me. So that kudos to you for dealing with that. That is so important. It's as important as anything. And when you talk about the election officers or officials, what are those specifically, those positions? What do they do? When you say you had parity in those ranks, tell people what they did.
When you go to vote at your precinct, there's people that run the election. Those are the election officers, and half of them should be Republicans and half should be Democrats. And they are the people who greet, the people who check you into the poll book. They're the people who make sure that the ballots are going in the machines, and they care for the ballots afterwards and before, making sure that everything's following the law and being done with integrity. And like you said, it's important for there to be a balance of Republicans and Democrats to keep each other in check. And then the officers that like manage that day and manage all the election officers are the chief, the precinct chief, and the assistant chief. And one of those is supposed to be from each party. So for the first time, and I don't know how long, we had that in Loudoun County.
That's fabulous. That I can't emphasize enough how important that is. So it's really impressive to me to hear and see what you did. So, okay, so that was step one. So, and that's a big project. So then what? What's next? Well,
we started doing trainings. We had planned to do that from the beginning, and we kind of got a boost for that. We were going to create our own training, but if it was already there, we weren't going to reinvent the wheel. And so Dr. Claire Bear Wheeler, who you know, is been involved in election integrity for years. And so she came and did a training, a double training, two different sessions here in Loudoun County. And we started educating people, and we called it election officer and poll watcher training because you need to know the same information. If you're an election officer, you're doing these jobs. And if you're a poll watcher, you're observing the election officers do their job. So you needed to know the law. You needed to know what the processes were and how an election day should go forward. And then if you're a poll watcher, you report that or go to the chief and make a request for something to change or express a concern or ask a question. If you're an election officer, you can do the same. You can bring it to the chief's attention if something's not going right. So we call them the first line of defense is the election officers, and the second line of defense are the poll watchers, both guarding and protecting the election integrity of the election. So we were training both and having people sign up for both. We wanted to really have a lot of election officers during early voting. 45 days of early voting here in Virginia is so long. It's tiring, and people get lax and tired, and it's got a lot of opportunity for vulnerabilities. So we wanted to have election officers there, but they were not real keen on hiring new election officers, and they kind of had their people the place that they wanted to use. So we used our people, whether they were election officer or not, to be poll watchers. I was both. I was an election officer and a poll watcher. Whatever
the need
was, absolutely. On days I wasn't working as an election officer, I was a poll watcher. And so it gave us the manpower that we needed. And we were doing the same thing, making sure that there was integrity in the election. So we had people signing up for both and being willing to do either or. and just training them up and preparing them to poll watch. And we made a form of the things and the data that we thought that we needed to get. It's not that we didn't know. This is all on the, you know, creating it for the first time. So it was a learning curve. But the people were so good, the poll watchers especially, were so good about giving us the information and observing. And we gathered a lot of good data, and some of it became very critical. I think one of the most difficult things of early voting is that the machines, when on election night, they close them out, they have a statement of results, and you know what who the winners were for the election. For early voting, you can't know those results until election night. And so they have to kind of put the machines to sleep. And then when the machines reach their capability, which we have Unison machines here in Loudoun, and they can hold about right under 5,000 ballots. So when they were getting close to that, they would close them out, and then it'd be zeroed out. So we had to keep meticulous numbers to know how many ballots were being cast, or you couldn't go in and see that it was zero in the morning on the first day, because it didn't end for 45 days. And so it zeroed out several times. And if we didn't keep all those numbers in between, we wouldn't know the total votes for early voting to hold a check on the results. And the other thing was every time they closed them up, the thumb drives were removed. Mm. So we were able to write down the serial numbers of the thumb drives, how many ballots were on them, and then make sure that all of those thumb drives were downloaded on election night and none were missing, and that they had, were the same ones that were taken out of the machines. So some of this, we didn't fully know what we were doing, but we had a long list of information that the poll watchers would gather every day. And they were just faithful to do that. And it provided a lot of useful information to help bring integrity to our election.
So Shelley, are you, you have all that information that they brought to you every day. How do you maintain all of those records? I mean, do you just have written paper reports, or did you come up with a project management software, or how do you track all of that?
That is a great question. And that was probably our weakest link. Because it was happening, as we went. And then of course, October 18th, we went from one location, the election office, to four locations. The data became, just multiplied. So it was a process, where we could definitely check the numbers the night before, like if there were 2,050 ballots that had been cast, by in the evening, they would text me and we'd make sure that it was 250 ballots starting the next morning. So that was one check that we did that was an easy check. But as far as the thumb drives and a lot of the other data that we were capturing, we needed a better data system. I have a research and analysis team. They were helping, and we considered Basecamp or some kind of data storage place. And that we decided not to do it because we were so small. But in retrospect, we should have had something that we could have stored it on. And but they really were coming together, helping me make Excel sheets and tracking it. But that's something that we want to improve on. Another thing we thought about, maybe instead of the paper documents for the data, is doing something like a Google Doc or something like that, where they're entering the data right into the Excel sheet. So that's something that we're going to meet next week, and we're going to evaluate some things. And that's something we really want to improve on.
Well, that is very helpful, because as people are starting to do these things, we hope and replicate what you've done in Loudoun County. Any lessons learned that you develop, we're happy to share through the Election Integrity Network and post. We have a tab on our website. Our website is www.whoscounting.us, and we have a resources tab, and we will create something, like, for instance, that document that you showed about recruiting election officials. If you will send a PDF of that to me, we'll post that on the website. And we want to share with people whatever you can share with us, because we want people to feel as though they don't have to have a lot of experience in this. You came to this with experience as an election official, but you can share your information with others, and that way they don't have to start from scratch. So whatever you guys come up with in the way of lessons learned and recommendations, please share, and we'll get the word out to others as well.
We have two main documents that we use, and I can share both of those with you, Cleta, and they may be improved for next year, But you'll see that one of them was a tally sheet where we kept track of like the golden rods. We have some very bad laws here in Virginia that were passed like in the first 3 weeks of our General Assembly flipping, you know, both Senate and House of Delegates flipping Democrat and the governor being Democrat. So there was no way to stop some of these things from going through. But, you know, like I said, you don't have to have an ID, a photo ID. You still have to have an ID. But if you don't have an ID, there's a form that says, I am who I say I am. So that's one of the laws we'd like to see changed. We kept track of those. We kept track of goldenrods. So I told you how last year they had to turn in their absentee ballot to be able to vote in person. They just weren't spoiling those properly. But this year, you didn't have to turn in your absentee ballot. You could just come and say, I didn't receive it or I lost it. And if I find it, I won't use it. And so that was even worse. So we kept track of the golden rods and things like that. So
tell us what is a golden rod?
A golden rod is a form that you sign that says, as the voter but would say, I don't have my absentee ballot with me. I either lost it, I never received it, or if I do, I won't vote it. So it's kind of on your honor, the same as the little half white sheet of paper that's I am who I say I am, which means I don't have any ID on me, but I really am this person. I mean, they're both so lax. And I hope that with our new governor and new General Assembly, that we can quickly roll back those laws and bring integrity to our laws in Virginia again.
You know, that's pretty interesting, isn't it, Shelley, that they show up at the polls, they probably driven there, and they say they don't have any ID.
Oh, I was tempted to to contact a police officer, and I didn't. I stuck to business.
Well, that is pretty interesting to me, though. I mean,
I thought the same thing. Yeah.
Did that happen a lot?
It happened a lot, too many times.
Wow.
And I would say very frequent. Yeah.
So let me ask this question. Are those records of the golden rods or the I am who I say I am forms, are those records kept and are they accessible now?
That's a good question, because a lot of that also happened on Election Day. Now, they couldn't use the golden rod on Election Day. Election Day, you had to have your absentee ballot or you were given a provisional ballot. So they said that they didn't have time, I guess, to check, you know, which is interesting because Republicans tend to vote on Election Day. But anyway, there's problems with that. So I think that's a good question to find out if they're kept. I'm sure they're kept. I'm sure that they would be considered election
records
that would have to be kept for the 22 months, I would think. But I can find that out. That's a good question.
Well, the other thing I'm wondering is what the state statute is on retaining records for the elections, because the 22-month requirement is for federal elections. So I'd be curious to know if there's a separate statute for the elections that are just when there are state and local offices on the ballot.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's less. You're right. And I'm not sure if it's a year or it may be, and I hope it's not till the next election, but I'll look into that. That's a good question.
That would be something to check and to see if there's, yeah, I'm trying to figure out, it would be worth at least trying to see the identities of people who said, I am who I am, but I don't have an ID. If they have that would be worth, if they let you have access to those records.
I would think they could be before you. I'm not sure though.
I'm not either. All right. So what are some of the other things that you said that you attended the election board meetings? And I know that you were in the election office every day. So tell us about that. What did you do when you were at the election office?
It's important to be there because you can be an influence for good and for integrity. And some of it, I just had to follow the laws. And some of the laws, like I said, were just not good laws that we had to just go with. But there were things that when I was first, I was actually poll watching one day. And, you know, when you do an absentee ballot, it has to meet certain criteria. And if something's missing, they cure it. They call you and they let you have 3 days to come in and fix your ballot and then it's counted. And so a woman had come in to cure her ballot and the election officer was just, they were just pushing goldenrods. And they were just like, well, you don't have to do that. We'll just spoil your ballot. You can take a goldenrod vote right now. And she'd come in to cure her ballot. She'd been called. She was following the process. And So I stepped in as a poll watcher and said, can she cure her ballot? And they got the chief, and the chief talked with her, and she wanted to cure her ballot. So they went and got her absentee ballot. She needed a witness signature. It was done, and her ballot was counted as an absentee ballot. But I just saw them wanting to push the easy way, which wasn't the best way, because if the woman had actually signed that goldenrod form, she would have been committing a felony, because it says that I've never received my ballot, and if I receive it, I will not vote it. She'd received it, and she had voted it. So it was really, you know, a bad policy there. And then another time, there was an election officer who was explaining the ballot in detail to every voter. And I took a lot of bringing that up. And I don't know that he ever stopped, but he was called on it several times. But we have bond issues on the back of the ballot. And he would explain, now, please consider the three bond issues on the back here. And he'd say, one is going to help build, you know, our schools. One of them is going to stop traffic in Northern Virginia and help build our roads. And the other one is for public safety purposes, like building a firehouse. And so he was explaining these and pointing them out on the ballot. And I'm like, if that's happening outside when you're passing out the sample ballots, that's what your job is. It's campaigning, but no campaigning inside the 40-foot line. And at one time I finally said to my chief, I said, do you want me to start explaining the ballot to the voters as well? I mean, that wasn't, I shouldn't have, it would have been wrong, but I could have explained it a whole different way. These are the three debt issues on the back, and this is going to increase our taxes and, you know, cause debt. And the schools are already dropping by 7% here in Loudoun County. Why would we want to build it, you know, another school, go into debt for that? So, you know, it was really frustrating to hear him explaining the ballot to the voter. But, you know, I just, because I was there, was able to bring things to the attention of the chief or to the registrar. And there are multiple things, but just having integrity. I tried to be a good witness for integrity. I tried to make sure that I wasn't being biased in any way, and that I was professional, and I just set an example that way. And I felt like I did in the election office. I hope so.
I'm sure you did. Did they ever make this guy stop doing that?
They talked to him several times.
So it seemed like he was undeterred, and he just started again. But
continued to do it. So anyway, but you have to realize, too, like, we are poll watchers. They would wear a badge, and they tried to really follow the rules as well. And we were not the most welcomed in the beginning. And people said, why are you here? We usually only have poll watchers on election day. But we would explain, we have 45 election days now, and that's why we're here every day, to make sure the election has integrity for every day. And so our poll watchers were just wonderful and kind, and they would cooperate, you know, if they were told to, you know, move a certain place or whatever. But we had to realize we had to be wise, too, because we had an election officer one night tell them that they had to go home, and they weren't allowed to see the closing. And they went home, and I was an election officer that day. I was kind of frustrated, and I'm not supposed to talk with them, so I didn't. But they said that they were told by the election officer to go home. And that was the night they were closing out the ballots, and we needed all the numbers. So I was glad I was there, but they needed to talk with the chief, because the election officers are a partisan. And sometimes most of them are just neutral and want everything done well. But sometimes you have someone who is partisan who steps over the bounds, and that one had stepped over the bounds by telling them they need to go home.
You know, that's a really important thing to put in every training, is to tell poll watchers, do not go home, even when they tell you, do not go home. Yeah. Learned that lesson from my time in Atlanta after the election last November. And when those poll election workers sent all the observers home saying we're through for the night, and as soon as everybody was gone, they started running absentee ballots again, and running through the tabulators. And, you know, we got that video. They didn't know that they were being videoed, and we would never have known that they were continuing to process ballots after they sent people home. So that, to me, is one of the number one things to try to tell all poll workers and observers: do not leave. Even when they tell you to leave, then you need to go to the very top. And if they are still trying to make you leave before the officials are leaving, then you need to have a remedy in place to do something about that. So
the procedure on normal election nights at the precinct is whoever's there has to stay till it's over,
right.
Just to protect the integrity of the results so that nobody's spreading that information before it's been reported to the proper authorities at the right time. So that really is the normal procedure. Everybody stays until it's over and then you leave together. So we need to follow that. I agree with you. That's a good point to tell people.
So what are some, you said you had two primary documents that you prepared. What were those?
I have them in the other room. So
that's all right. We'll post them on the website.
Okay. So we would get the just the serial number of the machines and there's a lot of security clips. There's a whole lot of security things and it's good. And there's a lot of checks and balances that are good, but in some ways, sometimes they're a little bit for show as well. But there's several security clips, so we would get the numbers of those every morning and every evening to make sure that they hadn't been tampered with, and they hadn't, which is good. And the election office would work with us on that, and they kind of knew the routine sometimes better than some of our new poll watchers did, and what numbers we were looking for, and we would write them all down, and what the ballot count was. The ballot count in the morning and the evening were the most critical numbers, and then also the poll book count. Because that needed to tie, and we also needed to make sure that we needed to know what the poll book number was at the end, because that was zeroed out every day too. So there was data that would be missing if we did not come in and take that data down that day. And then the thumb drive serial numbers, whenever they were changed out, would have been lost information if we hadn't been there taking the notes. So that was the kind of stuff on there, besides observing curbside voters, observing the other ones I told you about. We watch drop boxes. I'm looking. I do have a sheet over here with some tallies. and see if there's anything else.
So let me go back. Let's go back and make sure that everybody understands what you just were talking about. So the poll books. These are electronic poll books, correct?
Correct.
And so, what are those connected to? Are those connected to the internet?
So. With our machines, we had really researched them and tried to find out what was going on with them in advance. And we had made recommendations to our electoral board and the registrar, asking if there was internet connection with any of our machines. And our machines have internet capability. It was disabled, which meets the code of Virginia. But our internet IT guys were saying that it could be enabled at some point with certain software. So we weren't comfortable with that, even though that wasn't terrible. It was still a vulnerability. And so we requested that the internet capabilities be removed from machines, physically removed under bipartisan observation. It did not occur. So sometimes we would ask for what we wanted, but had to take what we got. So to the best of our knowledge, they were disabled. But the internet capability is there. It was just disabled.
That was for the voting machines.
That's right. And they had the poll books. They were on a connection to each other called a Merlin. So they had like a little server that they were connected to so that they could read each other. During early voting, they were all connected on a closed network through the county, a secured closed network of the county. On election day, they were just in the precincts. That's why, whether it was a old paper poll book that you got marked off or these electronic ones, that's why you have to vote in your precinct on election day, because there is no internet and there's no way for them to talk to one another to say, well, you just voted in Hillsborough, so you can't go vote in Leesburg. So that's why you have to vote in your precinct on election day. It's security and it's important. It's good. Early voting, they had to be on some kind of internet because you could vote in any of the election offices, no matter which precinct you were in. And so it wasn't internet, but it was intranet, a closed network county secured system.
So when somebody would come in and then they get marked off of the poll book, and then at the end of the day, there's a tabulation of how many votes have been cast, how many voters have been in and voted. And that is what you have at the end of the day. And so you all made sure that you recorded that. And then you also compared that and recorded how many votes appeared on the machine. Is that right?
Yes. And also what we wanted to do for early voting was to make sure that number was the only amount of early votes cast. Because it was zero the next day, votes could have been added at night and we would have never known. So we wanted to keep a check on, this is the only amount during the day of votes that had been cast early. And then we would be able to keep the record of this is the number it should be.
And you made sure they matched at the end of every day.
Yes.
And then that was, and you had those records.
Yes.
And you kept all those records, right? You still have all of those.
Yes. So we still have a whole lot of data we can work with.
Okay.
Yeah, we actually do want to. We really do. Now that we have the luxury of a little bit of time, we want to go through the data and just evaluate it and just see what we come up with.
And then, so talk to us about the different kinds of, let me finish this. Were there any other documents that you prepared that you guys used and relied on? You said you had a couple of major documents, and if you've already explained what those are.
I'll just say that. So things that we still want for next time are, we'd like to have a shorter voting season. We'd like to have more bipartisan observation. There were parts of the process that we still were not allowed to see because the seasonal or the election officers, I mean, the election staff, the registrar staff was doing those jobs. And so they didn't let us observe those parts. There were only certain parts we could observe. But one, there's a lot of good checks and balances in the system. When you get involved and you're working, you're happy to see that, and that's good. But there is no check on the results. So whatever the machine says the results are, that's what you get. And we would love to see, even if it's a hand count of, you know, a random precinct from time to time, to just verify that machine is giving us the accurate results. So that's a vulnerability we feel like hasn't been accomplished or verified yet. And just for integrity, we'd like to still see that happen.
Well, you know, I always say that I think ballots and votes should be treated as currency. They're very valuable. They're the currency of our country. And I think that every ballot should be treated as though it is a $5,000 bill or something really valuable.
Yes.
And, you know, and then there should be audits. There should be post-election audits that go, and they should be selected after the election so the officials don't know. And they should be conducted by someone other than the election office auditing itself. I think that is a step that would be very useful this whole year. And seeing what happened in 2020, I've thought, you know, that would go a long way toward giving people more confidence
absolutely.
In the election.
Yeah.
But
even if we had election officers do the count and, you know, one precinct or a couple precincts during part of the canvass, which is, you know, where they're after the election, they have election officers check the numbers that were called in by the precinct captains and the precinct chiefs and the actual tabs from the machines, and they make sure that ties, and that's really good. But it would be good to do a hand count of one or two precincts to make sure that those ballots actually tie to what the machine is saying. I think that would be a good verification process, and again, would give confidence to the people. In the state of Virginia, we do have to have some kind of audit, but I participated in the risk limiting audit that we had in Virginia, and it was
a joke.
Pitiful. We did 63 ballots out of 250. I don't remember the exact amount, but it was over 200,000 ballots for Loudoun. And when we did, we were three teams and two election officers, Democrat and Republican. And we each did 21 ballots. We had to spend hours finding the exact ballot that we were supposed to pull. But then when we did, it was such a small sampling. And our table, President Trump won by one ballot. Another table, Trump lost by one ballot. So Biden won by one ballot. And the other one was more of a mix. And to me, that was a very close race just with that pitiful little sampling. And so... anyway, obviously the audit was not sufficient. And so people will ask, well, wasn't there an audit? And then you have to answer yes. But was it a satisfactory audit? Absolutely not.
Well, the truth of the matter is this whole notion, I'd never really heard of a risk limiting audit until last year. And So I've done a little research about that, and it turns out that the whole idea of a risk-limiting audit is, it was concocted by some professor somewhere and adopted by all these left-wing groups to really pretend that there was an audit when there really wasn't. And I think that we have to educate election officials that these risk-limiting audits are really nothing at all, and that we really need to strengthen the auditing, the post-election auditing process everywhere. That's something I think state legislatures should do. And there's an election reform bill in Pennsylvania that was passed by the legislature, vetoed by the governor because he doesn't want voter ID. But it includes a whole section on post-election audits, so that every county in Pennsylvania would be audited every so many years. You don't ever know when your number's coming up, and it would be conducted by, it'd be a full audit conducted by the state auditor. So things like that, I think, are a step in the right direction. But
one of our goals was to increase voter confidence. And I think we did that through education. The more people understood the process, the more confident they became, and the more they realized that we were there watching and they were there watching and observing. And I really do believe it had a big effect having observers there at every, for early voting, we had observers every day, all day at all locations, except for a few hours in one. But it really made a difference. And not only were we there to bring integrity and make sure things were done well, we were able to get reports of something that was off. And then we were also able to get the data that we needed to hold accountability.
So I want you to share some of the stories about any little hiccups that came along where those who've been around the election office for a long time and hadn't seen Republicans there, and then you guys showed up, and share some of what happened when you guys started being there at the office and attending the board meetings.
I think they're surprised. I think they think we'll quit. We won't keep coming. And we just kept coming every day. And we keep coming to every electoral board meeting. And we speak at the electoral board meetings as well and give our comments. So I think they're getting used to us. There was a lot of complaints. I was surprised at the, because I was an election officer for most of this. I was hearing it on the inside. A lot of complaints about the poll watchers and disdain. And that was so sad because the poll watchers were just wonderful people trying to bring integrity and really not hindering in any way. We had a news team come in. I mean, there was so much complaining about the poll watchers. A news team came in and truly interrupted the election. I mean, had their cameras, you know, all over, were trying to film voters voting and asking, and some voters didn't want to or felt uncomfortable. And nobody really complained about that news team. I mean, I was uncomfortable with them being there. They just were invasive and interruptive. And so it really was unfortunate that was the view. But I really do think our poll watchers won over the election staff, you know, by the end. I'm not sure that they'll be, you know, cheerleading or jumping up and down that they're there again, but I think they're used to them and they realize that they really didn't cause any problems and that they had good intentions and did a good job without any interference or any hindering.
Gosh, I'm surprised they let them bring cameras in because you know, a lot of states prohibit cameras inside a polling place, cameras of any kind. So I'm merely kind of surprised that they would let them come in to when people are voting. Oh, my. I can't imagine that. Shocking. So what is the plan now? What will you do next? Because there's obviously a big election in Virginia a year from now. So what will your plan be for that?
My biggest, two biggest goals are to broaden our group, to share the leadership more so that I have other people in charge of different areas. I mean, we had badges and we had our clipboards with the forms on them for people to fill in, and just coordinating that at the different locations was challenging. And so I had people kind of stepping up and filling in that gap a little bit last minute, but they did a great job. And so having people in place already to do those things, and maybe take leadership of some of the areas. I saw people becoming leaders and becoming engaged. One man actually rewrote our survey because he thought he could, you know, had some ideas to make it better, and it is better. And so we went with his mid election season. We switched over and started using his tally sheet, and it was better. So it was we have some good people that I hope will take more leadership roles, and then I can spread that you know, responsibilities and let them run with it, because a lot of this was being created on the spot, and other people have ideas that we'll benefit from if they've got, you know, leadership roles and can come up with those ideas and share them. The other thing is definitely our data and our storage and you know, accumulation of that. So we'll be meeting next Monday and beginning that process of evaluating what went well, what do we need to work on, and how do we strengthen ourselves and broaden ourselves so that we're more prepared and stronger for the next election and going forward.
So, Shelley, what were some of the areas you said you were covering, several different subject areas besides just recruiting election officials and poll watchers and doing the training? You mentioned Dr. Clarabel Wheeler. She's not an attorney. She's a doctor, a hand surgeon by her career, but she knows the Virginia election code frontwards and backwards. And not only that, but she knows the procedure. She knows the general registrars. She just knows so much of the things that aren't even written down. And it's all in her head. I keep wondering how we're going to replicate that in other states, because she's such a valuable resource. I wish we could clone her, but she doesn't know the Georgia law like she knows the Virginia law.
Well, I think we have a broader base of people here in Virginia now, at least Loudoun County, who understand the election process and the terminology. And we continued the trainings after she, you know, left. We continued them here in Loudoun County. And sometimes we'd have 20 or 30 people. You know, she had 100. So, but sometimes we'd have 20 or 30. Sometimes we'd have 10. And we just would train those people and talk with them. They'd ask questions and they'd learn. And so I think that having that educated base helps all of us. And then we had a really good research and analysis team, and they researched machines, and we kept we also researched the past election and tried to understand the data from the past election and what do these items mean, and understand our absentee ballot process. That's a huge area that needs reform, and the voter rolls need to be cleaned up, and there's a lot of work to be done. So we're hoping to form some teams that focus on some of these areas and make more progress for the next year. So I hope that answers.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, I don't know if I've sent you, but we have just released the Citizen's Guide to Building Election Integrity Infrastructure. And it has several different areas. You touched on most of them, but list maintenance and voter rolls is a key issue that we need to address. I know that's something that you all were interested in, but there wasn't much you could do because of the short time. And but I think it is something that we have to address everywhere. And researching what kinds of data, when you're looking at past election data, what would be the kinds of things you would be looking for? What would you tell people they should be looking at? What kind of data, voting data, just what kind of data were you looking at?
Well, we were looking a lot at the absentee, the ballots. Last year, the absentee ballots were kind of lumped together, whether you voted in person or you voted actually mailed in your ballot. So this year, at least, they were separated out. That helps a little bit. So we were evaluating that. We were evaluating to see if some of these people were real. We were looking for anomalies and anything odd. We were looking at the percentage of votes compared to registered voters, what the turnout was. The turnout on election day here in Loudoun County was very favorable to the Republicans last year. I think President Trump won almost every precinct in Loudoun County on election day. And then the absentee ballot vote totally flipped that. So that was a surprise, and it discouraged people. They didn't know what had happened. And there were a lot of questions. And there's also narratives and just rhetoric that's given. So the rhetoric was, well, Democrats always vote early, and that's why. But every Republican I know voted in early last election. So that's not a good answer. And so we were just trying to dig and learn And as along the way, as we would see a vulnerability, we would point that out to the election office and make a recommendation for improving that vulnerability. And so we weren't sure if we would find anything or not, but they were doing queries and things like that, just with the different data to see what they could find, if there were anomalies or anything that stuck out to them. And we're still not finished with that. We still have work to be done there. We had to put some of that on hold because of the current election that we're in. We just had.
Well, one of the areas that we have included in the Citizens Guide is protecting vulnerable voters. If there are people in nursing homes, and I don't know if that's something in Loudoun County, but certainly it is in some parts of the state and in certain parts of the country where you have to worry about nursing home staff voting ballots for people who may not have they may have dementia or whatever. So there are some things like that I don't know if that's an area that your team was involved in at all, or if that's something that you might have talked about or discussed.
It is. We started to work on that and ended up putting it on hold because we just didn't have the staff or the time. But we came up with a 3-pronged plan for the nursing homes, and we'd like to get that going this next election or now so that we have it. We wanted to find out what the election policy was at each nursing home. So we researched the nursing homes and found out how many there were and their contact information. And we started down the path, but just again, we ran out of time and resources. So what we wanted to get that in writing, what the election policy was, so we knew the nursing homes we could go into and which ones we're not supposed to go into, and also keep an eye on those, that make sure nobody else was going to those that we couldn't go into. And then we wanted to go into the nursing homes we could and talk about our candidates and bring, the Republican, policies to the voters and encourage them to vote for our candidates. And in that process, getting to know the staff and kind of evaluating that nursing home as well. And we were told maybe because of COVID, we couldn't come in, but we had then thought of even a Zoom kind of interaction with them where we could tell them about our candidates, maybe have some of our candidates speak. And then the third prong was working with the election office, because the election office works with the nursing homes as well. And a few of them actually have a polling place there on election day. So as election officers, we wanted to get some of our people involved in helping with the nursing homes through the election office. So those were our three areas where we wanted to get involved, and it didn't get off the ground. And so I hope we can get that going before the next election.
Well, and there is there's a project that was put in place a year ago for the 2020 election by the American Constitutional Rights Union. And it is a national Protect Elderly Votes project. And they have a lot of resources that they've prepared for letters that they will send to nursing home directors saying, here's what the law is and how what is legal to do versus what's not legal to do. And so that's we're going to do I'm going to do an interview with Lori Roman at the ACRU to talk about their project on training and protecting elderly votes. And there are other vulnerable populations, that I think that sometimes the leftists say that they're trying to protect these voters when really they're preying upon those voters. They're not preying for them, they're with them, they're preying upon them. So
there's something called a voter needs assistance form. And so usually that's done well. The person has to consent to be helped to vote, and then the other person can help them. But that's an area where, there could be some abuse. One thing we saw, this isn't really a vulnerable population, but it was a little sad. A lot of young people who were going to be 18 on November 2nd, which was our election day, hadn't registered to vote. They didn't realize that they had to register to vote when they were 17 if they were going to be 18 on November 1st or by November 1st. And so several of them missed the deadline and came to vote early and had missed the deadline to register. So we need to get the word out to young people to register early, even when you're 17, if you're going to be 18 by November 1st. So we would always cheer on first-time voters. And so we think they were a first-time voter, and a few of them, it's going to be next time.
Okay. Right. I have just a few more questions, I guess. Virginia has a really good FOIA law, so that it was easy to obtain information well, I don't want to say it was easy. I'm just saying the law makes it relatively simple to request documents and materials under the FOIA law. That doesn't have to be a particular form. It can be an email. It can be, I guess, a phone call or whatever. Talk about any of the FOIA. Why would it be necessary to do FOIA requests? And can you think of any particular ones that you did and why you would do that? And how did that work?
We did several. I know Fairfax did a whole lot of them, but we did several. We asked about the money that was given. They called it Zuck Bucks, money that was given from a left-wing group. And a lot of that was used to buy high-speed scanners. So we were never able to pin down our election office. They were saying that they had purchased that before the Zuck Bucks came. And maybe the Zuck Bucks were just used to pay for all the extra personnel that were needed for the 45 days and that kind of thing. But coincidentally, Zuck Bucks were accepted for the first time. It was a grant, and we got the high-speed scanner the same year. High-speed scanner is a little vulnerable. That's what processes the absentee ballots. And when you do the voting machine, the ballot drops down into a tub, and it's not ever seen again until you close out the machine and they're securely put into a, you know, box and that kind of thing, secured by election officers and sealed. But the scanner just flips them through just like a copy machine kind of thing, and they're vulnerable. So we made quite a few requests through our chairman, our Republican chairman, Sharon Sadler, to the office that they would make sure that those ballots were put into a secure location right away. That there would be, maybe we had asked for them to be like taped or bound or something once they went through the machine so that they couldn't be easily run through again. And we made a lot of recommendations and requests. And so they came up with their own solutions for that. For the absentee ballots this year, they saved them, which I didn't like that idea, but they saved them to a certain hour at the end of the day. It was like 1 o'clock or 12 o'clock. So it wasn't like 5 o'clock. And they would have us observe as bipartisan observers, observe the process of those. And then they did have a counting sheet on each top of each 100, and they were put in a box and secured for the day. So it was a better process, especially because last year we couldn't observe the ballots being scanned in the high-speed scanner. This year we could observe, and we saw them trying to be, kept secure in the boxes. And I feel like there was much more integrity this year with that high-speed scanner. So I kind of got off from the Zuck Bucks and the FOIA. So, but that whole absentee ballot processing is another area to investigate and keep track of. So the FOIAs, we FOIA'd that money, how it was used. We FOIA'd about the internet, about some of the machines. We also tried to FOIA the ballots, because with all of our research and all that we would get out, we met several times with the election office, and they answered questions that we had. But we could never verify that the results of the machines were accurate to what was reported. And so that we just wanted that check. And that's the only way we could put our stamp of approval on the integrity of the past election. So we asked, we FOIA'd, and we had asked for the ballot scans, that we could compare them to the results of the election, I guess kind of like an audit, but we just wanted to count them up and add them up and make sure that they tied. And then we would know that the machine's reports were accurate. And they were denied twice. So we did ask, but they were denied.
Well, I think this year you have, through this election, you've created your own record, which hopefully will help answer that question.
Well, but I don't know the result. I mean, I only have the results from what the machine says. Because, you know.
Oh, that's right.
We haven't done
that's true.
Count. Yeah,
that's
the numbers are right. Yeah. But what the results are, I trust that they're right, but I'd like to know for sure.
Yeah, that's a good point. You've got two of the three pieces. You've got the poll book number that ties to the what the machines tabulate, what the tabulator says. But what you wanted to be able to do is to say, okay, now let's count. Let's look at least some precincts. Let's do a random selection of the ballots and see if they tie to the other two.
To verify the results.
That's a good point, Shelley. Shelley, is there anything that I haven't asked you that you would tell people if they're interested in creating the same kind of task force that you did? Are there a couple of things, anything that I haven't asked you, anything that you think of what you would say to people who might be thinking about doing something like this? What would you tell them?
I think they need to learn what they can through a seminar like I went to in Harrisonburg, or through a Jim Winterbo Wheeler's trainings, which are online now because of the RPV came in Virginia and put them online, and just start learning what you can, attending your electoral board meetings, but then get involved with your local Republican Party and get involved. Become an election officer for sure. You'll learn so much that way. And then just stick with it, persevere. And I hope Atlanta County, even though we didn't win, the Republicans did not win Atlanta County this year, but we won in Virginia. I hope people won't slack off because we have the governorship now and the General Assembly. We have got to stand guard. I told our poll watchers, it's like a bank. You know, if there's no security guard there, that bank is much more likely to be robbed than one that has a security guard. And the security guard may have a boring day, you know, 99, you know, or 364 days of the year, but he's there if there's a problem, and he deters a lot of problems from occurring. So we've got to keep standing guard. We've got to stay involved. And as you're there, you'll learn. And we learned and we looked for vulnerabilities, and both were a benefit to us. And then we saw vulnerabilities. We made recommendations to our registrar, and they were overall receptive. I mean, as far as the 45 days of voting in Virginia, this is a new thing for them as well. So it's not perfect. They haven't worked out all the bugs. And so they were receptive sometimes to our recommendations. And then if they're not, just persevere, be persistent. Well,
and maybe we will have the good fortune to be able to shrink that 45 days. Maybe the legislature will shrink that. Interestingly, one of the citizens groups did a survey of all of the registrars. I think they did this in August or, you know, July and August. And I think I saw the results in September. But the number one thing that the registrars said that was that this is too long. It's very difficult for them as well.
It is.
And so I think maybe there might be hopefully that will change in coming years.
Well, it's not fair to the candidates either. We had some new candidates last election, and they were chosen late because of COVID, and things were moved back. You know, venues were not available. People couldn't meet to vote and that kind of thing. And then they were shortened on the other side because voting started in mid-September. So they only had this little small window to campaign before people were casting their votes. So it's not really fair to the candidates as well. And the staff is exhausted. They really are.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Well, Shelley, I could actually spend a lot of time asking you a lot more questions. I just can't thank you enough on behalf of everybody who cares about election integrity. Really owes you a debt of gratitude, and all of the volunteers who work so hard in Loudoun County. You really made a difference, and I think that's why there were so many articles written about the poll watchers and all, because you were making a difference. And it's just fabulous. So thank you so much for joining us, and thank you to all of our viewers and our listeners. You've been listening to Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell. We hope that you will subscribe to the podcast. We hope that you will share the podcast, and we hope you'll get involved in saving our elections. So thanks for joining Who's Counting, and we will see you next episode. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Who's Counting. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Conservative Partnership Institute's Election Integrity Network. It is filmed and recorded at CPI Studios in Washington, D.C. Help us grow this show by sharing this episode with a friend, and be sure to subscribe and to give us a good review. We need your word of mouth, because big tech can't be trusted and tries to cancel us daily. Help fight back by visiting whoscounting.us and sign up for this podcast, for our newsletter. Become part of the Election Integrity Network.